Welcome to episode 12 of Girls on Pop. I am your co-host, Brain Antunes, joined today by fellow co-host.
I am Ashley Lynch.
So the show is back after a very, very, very long hiatus. I'm not even sure, maybe over a year. So the basics here are we're going to continue with the same concept, which is just, you know, touching base on stuff around the entertainment world, and then we'll finish off with what we've been watching, but with a new host. So Ashley, introduce yourself to the masses.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, my name's Ashley Lynch. I am a video editor by trade. I work in film and TV. Most recently, I just wrapped up on the latest season of Ninjago, Masters of Spinjitzu, which will be coming out shortly. And as long as I'm plugging, there's also a short film that I edited a while ago called Summoned, which has just been announced will be part of Etheria Season 3 on Amazon Prime, which launches November 25th. So you can see that there. That one was directed by Victoria Angel. So definitely check that out.
Oh, well, congratulations. That's awesome news.
Yeah, it's huge. It's crazy because for the first time in my life, it's like they've used key art from our film for the entire season. And so now I'm seeing, like, on my Twitter feed, images from this film I edited just randomly showing up in my feed because other sites are picking it up and doing, like, the press release announcement on it. It's like, wait, that's a film I worked on. And it's like, this is new for me. I haven't worked on a film yet that has, like, gotten media attention like that. And so now it's surreal.
That's so exciting and well-deserved. I mean, you've been at this for a really long time.
Yeah. I mean, not too long in dog years, but I mean, I've been doing this for about 10 years now. So I got into the film industry fairly late, but I've tried to make up for it by burning the candles at any end I could possibly find. And so I have, like, this horrible habit of just taking on way too much work because I want to do all the things.
I know, right? And there just simply isn't enough time. I was thinking about that this morning. I'm like, do I have time to do all the things I need to do today? Probably not, but I'm going to give it a shot anyway.
Yeah, that doesn't stop us from doing them anyways.
No, it's so true. I'm like, I look forward to a day when I get up in the morning and I'm like, I have nothing to do today. It's never going to happen, but
I dream of that. I daily dream of retirement and it's never going to happen.
No, and let's be honest, when we do get to the point where we're going to retire, we're just going to find something else to do. So let's talk about some entertainment news. I think the thing that we were both we zoomed in on was the announcement that Wonder Woman is actually coming out this year.
Yeah, this is the new trend, isn't it? Where, you know, because the world is on fire and apparently the U.S. has decided they're just not going to do anything about the pandemic at all. Hopefully that will change with the new administration. But, you know, at a certain point, it's like there's only so much you can do if people don't take it seriously. And so as a result, theaters have been playing this kind of hopscotch of, like, pushing dates back and pushing dates back because the theaters aren't open because it's just not safe to have theaters open. And I know Tenet tried it, and I think they really paid the price for thinking that they could, like, jumpstart the theatrical industry again, because it just did not work. And so it looks like a bunch of movies, and Wonder Woman being one of the newest ones of them, has decided we're just going to give up the ghost on having a safe theatrical release anymore. And they're still going to release it in theaters, but it sounds like they're going to do, like, a limit, you know, fewer screens in theaters, but they're also doing a joint releasing it on HBO Max.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that, you know, I basically talk to anybody that will listen is what I can't quite figure out. I mean, I see the point of wanting to put this movie out or any movie out, you know, on the biggest screen possible, because that's what movies are made for. But when you push, if like, it's gotten to the point now where it's so ridiculous that everything has been pushed into 2021 that there isn't a weekend left. Like, there's a weekend where a big theatrical release is coming out every weekend. And the reality of the matter is, we may not be ready to go back into a theater until like next September. So what's going to happen to all those movies? Are they going to get pushed again?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like, we've never had a situation like this. So it's one of those things where it's like, there are no right answers. But you take, just specifically take Wonder Woman. You have a film that was set to come out this summer, obviously was not able to, still wants to have a theatrical release because, you know, it's Wonder Woman. You want to have that big theatrical release and not just dump it on streaming. And all these movies start to bunch up, and the longer you just leave Wonder Woman sitting on the shelf, the more it just becomes this giant chunk of debt for the studio that's taking on more debt as it accrues interest, because you have no revenue coming in to pay off this massive, like, whatever it is, like $200 million, $250 million investment that you've made. And that's the state of all blockbuster films. That's James Bond right now. That's, you know, it's all the big movies that are coming out over the next while have been constantly pushed back and back. Right now, all they are is a liability. And so at a certain point, if you don't know when the theaters are going to be able to safely open again, and you don't want to have like a, oh, we opened to $10 million with our giant $300 million movie because no one feels safe to go to the theaters, then at a certain point, you just have to bite the bullet and say, it worked for Trolls World Tour. I guess we better put this out on streaming.
Well, and I think I always think about the Disney situation where they also put Mulan on their streaming platform, but they charged that extra fee, and that clearly did not work for them.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I think people are just trying different things. Here's the unique situation that both Warner Brothers and Disney are in specifically, is that they've both launched streaming services. Mm-hmm. And so while you have like some HBO content to drive people to HBO Max, Disney probably a little less so. They had Mandalorian and then Mandalorian season two, and aside from that, just like, here's a bunch of old movies. They don't have the original content yet to drive people there. Now that none of the Marvel TV shows have come out yet, we haven't gotten WandaVision yet, we haven't gotten Winter Soldier and Falcon yet, so they just don't have the content to drive people to those platforms. So I can see why there's a certain kind of appeal in saying, hey, if we take Mulan, or if we take what's the other one that's coming out this Christmas?
Soul.
The Pixar film. If we take that and shove it right to the streaming site, then we can drive subscriptions. And I mean, that's been HBO's model the entire time. It's like, it's subscription-based audienceship. So they would drive subscriptions to HBO via these prestige TV shows that people want to see, whether it's Game of Thrones or whether it's Deadwood or whether it's Sopranos or whatnot. That's always been their business model. And so they're trying to, in these uncertain times, use that same model to drive people to Disney Plus. And whether or not it's working, I don't know. It's a little bit of a black box. It's hard to say.
Yeah, especially when nobody releases their numbers. When we talk about streaming, the one that it seems to me like the weird one out of the bunch is Apple, which came out, I don't know if you want to say strong, they came out with some interesting titles, and it's been like fucking crickets over there for months.
Yeah, they came out with a lot of content. Well, they had, you kind of have to when you launch, or maybe you don't have to because Disney Plus had one show. But Apple TV launched with a whole bunch of shows, and some of them were, I'm not sure there were many that were very well received, but they were there. And that's kind of to be expected. Like, I'm thinking about when DreamWorks first launched their studio back in the 90s, and it's like their first crop of films, not good films. It took them a couple of years to be able to start producing stuff that was people actually wanted to go see. So I think that's kind of normal when you have like new startup ventures like that. But at the same time, yeah, you're right. I haven't heard a lot about any exciting shows coming out of the Apple TV Plus platform. Although I'm sure there are some new content that's been on there that's pretty good, but I'm not subscribed to it, so I don't see it.
Well, I don't know. I turn that thing on every once in a blue moon, and I'm like, still the same shows, nothing new. On to the next thing.
And it's also the other thing where it's like, with all these platforms, there's so much content right now. It's like there was a time when I could keep up with all the content, and now I've just given up trying to keep track of it all. Someone will tell me about a show, and it's like, hey, you should watch this, and I'll go, no. No, I'm not super excited to see that show, and I have five other shows that I have not watched yet that I am excited to see. So I'm going to be realistic and say I'm not going to fit that one into my schedule. I'm just going to have to let it go.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the one thing I find interesting about Apple is we have Apple TV because it was included as like a 1 year free when my husband bought his phone. And they've since extended that freebie for another like 3 months because there has been no new content. So it's how they're keeping subscribers. Nobody's paying for anything.
Yeah. Well, see, that's my problem. I've still got an iPhone 8. I haven't upgraded in a while. So I need to do that just so I can get the Apple TV Plus subscription.
Let's go back a little bit to releases, because on the heels of news that Wonder Woman is going to be coming out at Christmas, I thought it was hilarious that Sony decided to actually bring back onto their release schedule for this year a movie that they had like already pushed to 2021. So Monster Hunter,
yes.
Singular. Yeah. Yeah. It's actually coming out at Christmas as well, which I think is hilarious.
You know, it makes sense to me because I mean, there's always usually some big release films that come out Christmas Day. That happens every year because there's always like, whether or not it's like people who don't have or aren't able to get home to see their families for Christmas, or just people wanting to get away from their families at Christmas. For whatever reason, Christmas Day seems to be a good launch for movies. I can't say I've ever understood that strategy, but apparently it works. So it makes sense to me that a bunch of movies are going to get dumped to streaming on Christmas Day. And that makes even more sense for streaming to me when you have families that are all going to be congregated together and maybe want to watch something. I have to ask, though, with how familiar are you with Monster Hunter?
Like zero. I know that it's based on a video game, and that's about all I know.
Yes. So I think the other thing that might be neat and why Sony might have made this decision is, yes, it's based on a video game. But also, I got one of the launch PlayStation 5s, and with one of those, they decided to say, here's 20 of our greatest hits that were on PlayStation 4, and you get them for free. And one of them was Monster Hunter World, which I hadn't played before. So I have since, still very early in the game, but I've gotten into playing Monster Hunter a little bit and, you know, checking out what it's all about. And it might actually end up being good timing for Sony to say, hey, here's this PlayStation 5 that you're all getting for Christmas while supplies last, because they're kind of hard to get a hold of right now. I pre-ordered the thing and I gave it like a 20% chance it was actually going to show up at my door, and it actually did. But now you have like this synergy of people playing Monster Hunter World for the first time on their new PS5 that they got for Christmas, and Monster Hunter the movie is released at the same time. So it kind of makes sense to me.
Big time makes sense. I honestly, for me, it was the combination of a Paul W.S. Anderson and Mila Jovovich that I kind of went, okay, sure, give me a giant monster movie.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, I mean, you know, they're a married couple. They're just going to be making movies, making schlocky video game adaptations for the rest of their lives. And like, God bless them for it.
I'm totally with you.
I don't have a giant affinity for the Resident Evil movies. I think they're far too goofy for my taste. But at the same time, I kind of love that they exist. And I know there's a lot of people who do love them. And I think, like, Monster Hunter, I know, has, like, a really big kind of built-in audience. And there are people who are very excited when this first happened. And here's the really interesting thing that I actually just discovered today. This is very recent news. Because they dropped the full trailer for it about a month ago. Mm-hmm. And when I first saw that, even though I hadn't played much of the game, I looked and go, this barely seems like Monster Hunter. Because it was leaning very heavy on, like, it's supposed to be like, here's a bunch of U.S. military soldiers, and they get kind of, you know, transported into a world, and there's these monsters, and they have to survive. And it had a lot of overtones of, like, the, you know, hoorah, U.S. military, you know, sort of thing to it. And it's like, this is weird. This is not the game. Because the game is, like, you know, anime girls with giant swords, you know, killing these, like, huge monsters and, like, skinning them for parts so that they can make new weapons and armor and stuff like that. You know, it's like, it's very exaggerated. And they actually just dropped the Chinese trailer for the game. And I just, or sorry, for the movie. And I just watched it right before we started recording. And this trailer is Monster Hunter AF. It is everything that the game is, and it's so wild how they've chosen, like, it's part of my job. I do a lot of trailers. It's part of one of the things that I specialize in. So I do a lot of film and TV trailer ads, and I find it so interesting to see how they've chosen, here's how you market Monster Hunter to Americans, and here's how you market it to the rest of the world. And the version that they've marketed to the world is very representative of what the game actually is. And the one that they've chosen to market to Americans is very much not.
Very interesting. Okay, we'll link to the Chinese trailer in the show notes, because now I'm really curious to check that out.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, and one of the big things is, like, you get, like, there's these creatures in the game called Palicos, which are essentially, they're like bipedal cats that are like your animal friend that, like, helps you out. And they don't really talk. They just sort of, like, make meow noises sort of things. And they're just like your little assistant, and everyone gets one. And in the original trailer, they didn't show up at all. But in the Chinese trailer, they're featured kind of heavily. So it shows you the two audiences.
Oh, for sure. The other thing that I think is really interesting about this is that, well, it's based on a Capcom game, but Toho is also involved, and I haven't quite figured out why, other than Kaiju.
I think it's just it's the right audience for them. It's the sort of content that their built-in audience is really going to appreciate, because it's giant monsters, it's people fighting them, and, you know, it's very much in that vein of the sort of stuff that they like to produce and distribute. So that makes total sense to me.
Agreed. The one thing that whenever I see Paul W.S. Anderson's name, the only thing I keep thinking of, you haven't made a good movie since Event Horizon. I can't help it. It just, I mean, that movie is so good.
Well, okay, I'm going to push back on that a little bit, because I mostly agree with you, but the Death Proof, or not Death Proof, Death Race. The Death Race remake that he made with Jason Statham.
Yes, okay.
was actually legit entertaining. I think that is a solid movie.
Okay, I could go with that. I mean, yeah. He's made some other stuff that's not bad. Because I think he also did he do The Umbrella? What was that? Oh, shit.
Well, the Resident Evil movies.
Yeah, but there was another one. There was another video game movie that I thought he'd made. Maybe it's one of the Resident Evil ones now. I can't remember. And I've enjoyed some of the Resident Evil movies. But when I think of, like, legit quality, I'm like, okay, it's Event Horizon all the way.
Well, and, like, I've played most of the Resident Evil games. And the movies don't resemble in the slightest those games is so far removed. The movies are their own just batshit thing. So it's I see why people enjoy them for the schlockiness of it, but it's I don't know. It's own thing.
Yeah, no, totally. Zombie Crows was where they lost me, to be totally honest.
And it's so weird because every once in a while you'll get like, you know, four movies deep. It's like, oh, here's this character that's actually from the game. So maybe this is based on the game, but like that is the extent of the connective tissue that happens here. So you feel almost like schizophrenic watching it if you have any familiarity with the games at all.
Oh, man, which I don't, which is probably why I probably like them more than the average person. Still don't think they're great, but like you say, they're kind of entertaining.
They have absolutely. Like, you could do worse, you know, bringing up something on a Sunday afternoon to just sort of like chill out and, you know, have fun with.
So what have you been chilling out to recently? What has been your go-to when you need to unwind?
God, unwind these days. That's a loaded question. I think everything is unwinding. But in terms of what I've been watching, I just watched this last night. I watched the New Mutants movie. Based on the comic. Have you seen this yet?
I haven't. It's on my watch list, and I'm kind of, I don't know. I really like the cast. I'll say that.
So, yes, the cast is amazing, and they do an amazing job in it. It's often said that 80% of directing is casting, and if you hold that to be true in any regard, and it usually is, then this movie nails the 80%, because the cast for the movie is excellent. But I find the journey of this film fascinating. Because it was this troubled production at 20th Century Fox that it became this thing of like, is this thing ever going to see the light of day? And then it finally did. It got out of development hell. It got filmed. And it was set with a release date. And then all of a sudden it became an issue like, oh no, Disney's buying Fox. Is this movie actually going to get released? And then it got a new release date. It's like, okay, Disney's finally going to release this thing. And then a pandemic hit. And theaters shut down and New Mutants didn't come out. And so all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, this film is cursed. Is it ever going to be released? And suddenly it became this little movie that everyone was championing. It's like, I won't believe that New Mutants has actually been released until I see the end credits. And then finally, Tenet basically tried to open up theaters again and they put New Mutants out to this very limited theatrical release that very few people went and saw because it really wasn't safe to go back to theaters yet. And I suppose considering the situation, it did okay, but it also started getting really negative reviews. And it was like the public opinion on this movie just did a 180 overnight, where all of a sudden people are like, oh, maybe this movie shouldn't have come out. Maybe this is a bad idea. And it's like, oh, okay. And I didn't have any like huge stake in it, or, you know, I had no dog in the fight, but I was mildly curious. And, you know, my expectations had been thoroughly lowered by how people were reacting to it once it actually came out. And then I finally watched it and I was like, what the hell is everyone on? This movie is solid. It's not gonna rock your world. It's not the greatest, you know, superhero movie that's been made, but it is a good little movie. And I think the emphasis is probably on little because it is a small-scale movie, takes place in limited locations, and decided to take these characters and essentially make, I don't want to say pseudo, but make like a low-key horror film that takes place with these characters. And honestly, it was a great kind of way to bring these characters in and introduce them and do something new with superhero characters that we don't normally see. Because I think at this point, the last thing I wanted was just another straight up, here's the X-Team movie, you know, where a bunch of angsty teens find out they have powers and then have to go save the world. There's no saving the world in this. The only thing they'd have to save in this is themselves.
Have to move it up the list.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's definitely worth a watch. It's on streaming now, so you know it's easily available for everyone to safely see it. And if you're even tangentially into these characters, I mean, for me, I read New Mutants a bunch when I was a teenager. It was, you know, one of my go-to comic books. So it was really neat to see some of these characters being realized on the screen for the first time.
Yeah, and I haven't read the series, but I just love this cast so much. So I'm definitely in. I'm going to be watching this before we record again, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, speaking of the cast, it sort of leads into the other thing that I've been watching, because Anya Taylor-Joy, who plays Magic in New Mutants, is also in The Queen's Gambit, which is on Netflix, which is the dramatic series about a young girl who becomes a chess prodigy and sort of struggles with trying to make her way through that male-dominated world, and also, you know, dealing with substance abuse. Have you seen this show at all?
I have. This show was so good. I kind of started it on a whim because I really like Anya Taylor-Joy, and then I couldn't stop, and I watched the whole thing in like 2 or 3 days. It's so excellent.
She is so striking. Whenever she's on screen, I am just extremely enraptured in everything that she does.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. She has amazing chemistry.
Yeah. Now, I've only made it 2 episodes through this show so far. So that's mostly just a time thing. I just haven't been able to keep watching more yet, although I am definitely going to keep going with it. But what I've seen so far, I think it's an extremely well done show. It's done by Scott Frank, who's a longtime screenwriter who's worked on a lot of the Steven Soderbergh crime films. And it's just a really good dramatic series, and it's executed extremely lovingly in mm-hmm. a visual way.
Agreed. And I love the fact that it's captivating even for people that aren't into chess. Like, chess is a thing, and mm-hmm. it's definitely part of the show, but I've never been that excited to watch a chess match. It's such a great, great show.
Well, I don't think chess is probably, unless you are a giant chess nerd, I think chess is probably extremely boring to watch. And I think that just goes all around. But, you know, if you're one of the people playing chess, then it can be very interesting. Mm-hmm. But watching other people play it, not so interesting. But it also, chess has a kind of built-in dramatic structure to it. In a way, it's kind of like a baseball game, where it's probably, you know, I think baseball is probably more fun to play than it is to watch, but you also have this built-in drama to how a game like that will play out. So it's not so much what's happening with the game, but what's happening between the characters.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And the chess match in the middle becomes a metaphorical device for the relationship and conflict between the two characters on opposite sides of the board.
Yeah, it's used to great effect. It's a really great show. Highly recommended mm-hmm. from me as well.
And it's gotten a lot of praise. And this is the thing that I found so interesting, is when New Mutants first came out, it's of course got Maisie Williams with, you know, from Game of Thrones as Wolfsbane. And at the time, it's like, oh, she's like a huge star amongst all of these other kids who I've never heard of before, and it feels so lopsided in the casting. And now, having seen it after Queen's Gambit came out, and now Anya Taylor-Joy is just like this huge talk of the town. She's now like, you know, she's now a big deal because mm-hmm. of the success of the series and how acclaimed her performance is in it. And then seeing New Mutants under that lens now is like, oh, now Maisie Williams is no longer the biggest star in this movie. So it's amazing how quickly that can change. And also, it shows when you're dealing with a young cast, if you get the right young cast, they will immediately propel forward, which will lift your film up with them.
Exactly. I have been I don't know if it's obsessively watching, but I have been obsessed by the drama surrounding the whole NXIVM cult deal.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So I've always had a penchant for things to do with cults. So I like shows and whatever else to do with cults. So when this whole thing started unfolding, I was like ready for whatever they were going to throw at me. So this is the discussion of the battling docuseries about NXIVM. So HBO had a show called The Vow, yes, with Mark Vicente and, oh, now I cannot remember the woman's name. Abramson, I want to say, is her last name. But anyway, so HBO had their version of this unfolding drama of NXIVM, which was very, very interesting. And then shortly after that wrapped, Starz released their docuseries, which is only 4 episodes. And it's called Seduced Inside the NXIVM Cult. And it follows a different group of individuals that were also involved. Primarily, it's India Oxenberg, whose mother is like a famous movie star and she's royalty. It's a really, really interesting story. But so this for me has been, I've now watched both series almost back to back. I don't know if one is better than the other. They're both very interesting and different looks at the same organization. I mean, the end result is the same. Keith Raniere is a douchebag and deserves to be in prison forever. But
it sounds like it's happening.
Exactly. But I just thought that the it's interesting to see how the story of this group unfolding over from these two different perspectives has been really, really fascinating to watch. And I think for me, I think Seduced is the better documentary. It's more even keeled, and it's more than just, you know, two people talking about how they're going to take down the sky. Whereas the HBO documentary is very much, you know, these two people taking down the sky, and it's very, very personal. Whereas Seduced is much more what you would expect from a documentary with, you know, experts talking about cults and getting out and the process of how you get indoctrinated. So it's a very different approach to the material, but I would say that they're both definitely worth watching. They're both very, very interesting. And I would recommend them both.
Now, I've seen The Vow. Yes. And like you, I was enraptured to this case for a multitude of reasons, not the least of which is the fact that just by virtue of, for whatever reason, there ended up being this pipeline to Keith Raniere of young actresses from Vancouver.
Yes.
And it seemed to be mostly because they tapped into the cast of Smallville. And specifically, I think it was Allison Mack who ended up creating this pipeline that just sort of fed into the Vancouver film industry scene, into the NXIVM cult, and to the point where they even opened up, I think it was like one of their only like physical locations that they had. It's like an enrichment center or whatever they called it. It's all very Scientology-like. But they opened it up in Vancouver. And so as a result, being someone who works in the film industry in Vancouver, I always like tangentially knew people who were involved with NXIVM on some level. And I heard like various kind of stories that sounded very strange and off-putting, but were also extremely vague, that it was really hard to get a handle on what was going on. But I knew like something culty is happening. And then of course a lot more information comes out and it's like, oh, that makes sense. And so as a result, I feel like I've not a personal connection, but I've definitely feel like I have more of a direct connection to the story than I would to say something about Scientology where I don't know anyone in Scientology. So I was definitely very enraptured to it. And I watched all of The Vow. I have not watched Seduced. One of my biggest questions that I had about the vow specifically was I kind of want to know how they shot this thing, because there's a lot of footage that obviously they had access to, because one of the people involved in the series was also, while inside the Nixium cult, was planning on essentially making a movie venerating Keith Raniere. And so I have no doubt that he walked away with this treasure trove of inside material that they were able to use with the show. And that's all the kind of, like, you know, backlog stuff of Keith Raniere that you see in the show. But there's also other elements that get displayed as these, like, dramatic scenes, which are presented like the cameras just happened to be there for them when a character was making a giant decision or something like that. And, like, there's no way the doc crew was there for that. So it's clear that they're going back and reenacting a lot of stuff. And they never really make it clear where the line is between here's stuff that's factual and here's stuff that mm-hmm. we filmed for the narrative of the show. And mm-hmm. I'm not sure that actually helps them in presenting what's supposed to be a factual case, because it ends up feeling a little pseudo-factual, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And it didn't come to me as I was watching the show, but after I watched Seduced, I kind of started thinking about some of those things as well. Because you're right. And it's not apparent, to me, it wasn't obvious from the beginning, but you're totally right. There are things that you're like, did they go back and reshoot that? Because clearly they did. I never even considered that, to be honest. I just found it much more like personal and not as like the perspective was very clear that it was a very personal story. And I'm not quite sure that that plays as well as Seduced does. Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things about Seduced is that so Indy Oxenberg was basically like there until the bitter end. And at some point when she had left the headquarters in wherever they were in New York and went into New York proper, she was actually staying at Allison Mack's townhome or apartment. And at some point when they were asking her to pack up Allison's house, she had thrown into her backpack a bunch of personal stuff that Allison had around the house that she didn't think should go into storage. And months later, when the case sort of started to unravel and she went looking in this bag, she found a bunch of USB sticks that had all of this material on it that Allison had saved. A lot of it was their collateral, quote unquote, interviews with Keith Raniere. And it's all stuff that Oxenberg basically used in her defense, because she was one of the people that was, she was actually going to go to jail. The New York state attorney, when they charged Keith Raniere, she was also one of those that was called in the charges. Okay. And she basically got herself out by cooperating with the government. Gotcha. And using this material. It's really fascinating. I think it's a far superior documentary because it actually feels like a documentary and not, like you say, kind of pseudo-dramatized personal story. So I'd say it's definitely the better of the two. I was really enthralled by this much more than I was by The Vow. But I watched them both, and I would say watch both if you're at all curious about this, because it's crazy.
Yeah, I will definitely watch Seduced. I didn't know that there was a second series. I also know that there's a podcast, which I have not listened to.
Yeah, it's actually the podcast is quite good, and it's Canadian produced. I think it's produced locally.
Okay. Yeah, but like you, I've been also similarly obsessed with the story. And I feel like it's a little easier to kind of, I don't know, I guess obsessively gawk at it as entertainment in a way, because even though it did destroy a lot of people's lives, it's also something that is largely over now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it'll never be fully over for the people who went through it. They're going to be dealing with, you know, a certain level of trauma and reckoning for the rest of their lives. But it's also not an ongoing thing that needs to be stopped. Keith Raniere has since been arrested. He's gone to court and he's been sentenced to, I can't remember how many years, but I don't believe he's ever getting out of prison. So yeah,
125.
Yeah, yeah. So unless he actually is like a god, and can't die, which I highly doubt is the case, then I think he's going to have to start up a cult in prison.
You know what will never die is Keith Raniere's sweaty volleyball headband. I like it's the that video footage is the goofiest thing ever.
That's one of the things that gets me is you watch this footage of Keith Raniere and he's just like, he's this dork playing volleyball and spouting nonsense that's like, what the hell is he even talking about? But he says it like it means something. And then you watch all these people around him who just desperately want to believe in something. And as a result, they are enraptured and they're hanging on to every word and treating it like it is profound. And you're sitting there listening to the same thing that he's saying, and it's not profound.
Yeah.
You know, but like, this is how cults work.
Exactly.
And I think this is the other thing that is this just occurred to me. The one of the things that I think is so comforting about indulging in the whole Nixium story is we are living in an age of unprecedented conspiracism and cult-like behavior, where you have things like QAnon, which is legitimately a cult at this point, and is built entirely on nonsense, and it is destroying people's lives as we speak. And there's no way to really stop it because it's not based in anything concrete, because disproving it does nothing. However, with something like Nixium, it ended once you convicted Keith Raniere. It's like the head is cut off of the dragon and the nightmare is over to a certain degree. So you end up with this finality to a certain level of cultism in the whole Nixium thing that feels fulfilling because it has an end to it. It has a positive end. And I think that makes it a little easier to want to indulge in right now.
That is an excellent point. And with that, unless you have anything else to add, we'll call it a day on the first of the return of Girls on Pop.
No, I think that's good. I think that's enough cult talk for me for one day.
And we're ending on a positive note. We've left you with some things that you can watch if you're looking for some entertainment. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks with more. Until then, come on by atcpod.ca. Check out the show notes and we'll be back in a couple of weeks. So until the next one, we'll talk soon. Opening and closing credits are Happy Alley by composer Kevin MacLeod. For more information, visit incompetech.com.